What cutbacks do you think are coming as we look at today, the announcement that we talked about on the show about 40 minutes ago, the JSF F-136 extra engine is officially cut today, GE and Rolls-Royce being notified of that. Is this the last of these kind of major programs to go, do you think, or is this potentially a standard operating procedure moving forward?
Well, I think this is just the beginning. You know, Secretary Gates himself said that you can't go that deep in cuts without getting to some manpower and to some of the larger programs, and so I don't think this is the last of it. The 136 engine, of course, is significant, but I think there's more to come, and I think it's gonna be painful over at the Pentagon.
From an Air Force chief of staff and a warfighter's perspective, what is lost here with the F-136? What do we not have now that we had when this extra engine was still in progress?
Well, of course, there's a big debate about the performance of the F-136 versus the current and incumbent Pratt & Whitney engine. Some argue that the performance of the General Electric engine was superior. But I think the main thing you lose, Francis, is the competition. We've proved over years that having competition in an engine program gets the cost down and is the best deal for the taxpayer. And I think that the problem that Secretary Gates faces, and I certainly understand it, the service chiefs face the same thing on a number of programs, and that problem is that it's billions of dollars in development costs that you avoid by canceling the program, and those are dollars you have to spend right now compared with savings off in the future. So that's the choice they have, and difficult as it is, it's the one that they made.
It is almost a Solomon's choice because there are certainly good arguments to each side. Are there cases, not necessarily asking you to weigh in on the F-136, but are there cases where a pretty good return on investment argument can be made that having that competition, even though it involves extra money now, which the Secretary and the President are trying to cut, that investment is worth it long term?
Well, the case is between General Electric and Pratt & Whitney back in the early days of the F-15 and the F-16, where the price and the performance of the incumbent model of the engine grew and grew, and the performance dwindled, and it got to the point that the Air Force invited competition in, and as a result, both engines got better and the price got cheaper. But again, that had to be realized over a period of time, and you have to have the patience to wait that out.
We've covered a number of issues that pertain to the Air Force and to the Pentagon in general in the program today. One of those was contingency contracting and the idea that the changes are needed inside the Pentagon to understand that more services are purchased now than stuff, to use a technical term.
Right.
The cultural element of that was what was talked about at the Commission on Wartime Contracting hearing today. From your view as a leader inside the Pentagon during your career, how easy or hard is it to change culture on something like that, to get people to think differently, you know, change their entire worldview, I guess? And what are some successful steps to bring people along that might be resistors to that kind of cultural change?
Well, in any operation, and especially one like this, so you recall when we went into Iraq the first time, the prevailing notion was that we were going to be out very quickly. I mean, there were plans. We've read this in the various books that have been written about the conflict. There were plans that we would actually start withdrawing in 90 days, you may remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, everything that went in up front, of course, was military, uniformed. There were certainly contract efforts as well, and outsourcing on some of the things, but mostly it was uniformed. After a while, you have to be able to transition your uniform, especially in the services area, over to the sort of contingency contracting that lets others do this work for a longer period of time as you get settled, more and more settled in. So there's a temporal dimension to this that I think the services understand now a lot better than we did, because of course we've never been involved in anything quite this long. We're sort of learning. We're in unknown territory here. So I think we're going to see more of this. I think we understand a lot better now those things that can be contracted and outsourced versus those things that have to remain in-house.
Mm-hmm. And that takes us to the conversation about what's inherently governmental and what is. Does that make a difference to the warfighter whether a service is being provided by somebody under DOD auspices or whether it's a contractor that's providing it? Does it matter as long as the service is being performed adequately?
Well, I think to the people in uniform, it doesn't matter in the long run as long as it's being properly and adequately performed. There are some and many, and I'm included, that think in many cases we've just gone too far. And we've gone too far because in many cases we consider the military functions only in the context of the bases at home. We forget the context of the base of being at bases or being at deployed locations. So take the subject of transportation, for instance. You can argue very correctly that transportation functions at a at a domestic base can easily be outsourced and provided by someone else. When those same transportation functions are deployed over into a hostile area, now all of a sudden it becomes evident that if you gave away too much of it or outsourced too much of it, it becomes very evident that you're very short of that kind of skill. And you can talk about that in transportation engineering, many parts of the supply chain and logistics area. That we may have gone too far in some cases.
General, the two elements that you mentioned that are maybe the biggest areas for potential cuts are the larger programs and also manpower. I've got a couple manpower questions for you when we come back from the break, if we could.
You bet.
The other area that you mentioned, and Secretary Gates and the President have talked about, it's manpower. One of the big holdups there and could be perceived to be Capitol Hill. Secretary Gates has talked about maybe increasing TRICARE premiums, for example, on members of the military, and that was met with, I guess lead balloon would be the best way to put that. Are there places that you think that there are potential savings, or is what we have seen with moves like the Secretary's tried to make when it comes to personnel what you expect to see more of?
Again, I think there's good potential, Francis. We're going to see more of this. I like to emphasize, of course, that all the services try their very best to deal with manpower reductions just by attrition, and there's nothing more painful for any service than a mandatory release of personnel. It's a sense of betrayal that's felt not only by the members but by the leadership who aren't able to. Feel like they're not able to carry out the promises that were made to these service members and civilians when they signed up in the first place. So it's a difficult thing to do. I do see, however, the fact that there some of these reductions are indeed going to be painful, and I think we've even seen some of that in the ranks of the military services so far with selective early release programs. As far as the benefits go, Francis, I think you understand that every serviceman and every veteran, when they signed up, they were told that they would have medical benefits for life. And my family, my father was in the military service, and every time there's an erosion of that benefit, my 90-year-old mother gets very angry about it. So there's this, as I said, sense of betrayal that goes along with the, especially the healthcare part of it, that is just something we're going to have to face up to as budgets get tighter. I'll be the first to say that the military budget has to participate in trying to reconcile this multi-trillion-dollar deficit situation we're in. We can't bypass the military completely. It's going to be hurtful if we have to dig very deep into medical benefits.
Secretary Gates used the term eating us alive, referring to those health care costs a couple of months ago. And yet everybody seems to be sensitive to what you're talking about, which is promises made should be promises kept. I imagine a terrible balance that has to be walked inside the Pentagon on that.
Well, it is, and I think that describes the dilemma perfectly. And I know Secretary Gates doesn't want to harm the benefits that the veterans receive, but again, the country, the nation is facing a terrible crisis, and no one can expect that everybody's going to be exempt. Any one entity is going to be exempt from this, and I don't know if increase in TRICARE premiums is going to make a big difference, but I do believe that there's going to be some impact in military benefits, and I think that military members understand this and are ready for it.
Another story that we have on federalnewsradio.com is a story that Air Force Materiel Command is going to survey its 65,000 or so employees starting next week to ask them about voluntary early retirement and buyouts. Is this another thing that you think will become part of the arsenal, so to speak, when it comes to trying to figure out places that that cuts can be made, money can potentially be saved?
Well, there are not many very large populations like that that you can do, go to like you can in Air Force Materiel Command. Let me just point out that a lot of these civilian employees are ones that work at our air logistics centers, and they're the ones that do the overhaul and the periodic maintenance on the large fleet of aircraft. You've heard a lot of stories about the very old tankers that the Air Force has. Well, it's the people at Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma who refurbish and to keep these very old 50-year-old tankers flying. It's those people, and in many cases, and in some of the states, these air logistics centers are the largest employer in the state. So it's a painful thing when you talk about large-scale reductions in this kind of force, which would have a significant impact on the communities out there in America. It's not quite like cutting the uniform side. So, but again, these are economies and efficiencies that we have to come up with. Private-public partnerships, candidates to within the law to outsource work that is done now by the government. These are all things that are being looked at as a way to increase efficiencies. Again, at the direction of Secretary Gates, to see how we can do better in these areas.
General Jumper, your insight and your experience are always valuable to us, and I appreciate you being on with me today to talk about what you see moving forward.
It's always a pleasure.
General